Well, hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On this week's program, we'll hear from Don Robison, Seed Administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner, and we'll get some updates on what's going on in the hemp community this week. Thanks for taking the time to be on the program with us this week, Don.
Thanks for calling, Jason. Got some good information to get distributed here, and obviously, with what's going on in the country with the virus, it's got some pretty interesting times, I think, for everyone.
Well, there's so many words we could use to describe what's going on right now. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it because, of course, with the coronavirus happening right now, things are very iffy for everyone. But as far as hemp is concerned, right now, farmers would be thinking, how am I going to do this? When do we get started? How do we get started? So many things that go along with agriculture. How will this set back, and is it possible this could set back the hemp growing season?
I doubt if it'll set back the hemp growing season. It may delay, you know, if we start seeing shipment delays and things like that kind of thing, it could keep people from getting seeds if they're ordering across state lines, things like that. I just heard today that I believe it was UPS said that they were going to prioritize emergency funds or emergency shipments and that type of thing, medical supplies, essential items, things like that, medicines. They were going to prioritize that over other shipments, not saying they weren't going to ship other things, but you know, sure. You have probably got a plan for a day or two extra in shipping, a day or two extra in processing, because as an example, our office here at the seed section in Olivoisk, we have been directed or asked by Purdue if we can telecommute and work from home to please do so, so we can aid in the social distancing. And you know, with even without the students here, there's 8,000 to 10,000 staff at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still quite a few people for a couple of miles.
That's more than 50.
Yeah. That's more than 50.
And actually,
Trump's 10.
Yeah, I think it's 10 now. So, that's quite a few more. So, how many people are around the office that you're sitting in right now?
There are only five of us left. Mm-hmm. Four of us left.
Mm-hmm.
And we have determined a telecommuting schedule that we're going to put in place either later this week or early next week.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of hit us at a time where our example, the Indiana State Seed Lab, which I'm housed in and actually run, we have hundreds of samples of soybeans and corn that we're testing this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just leave those germinators and growth chambers to fend for themselves. You have to make sure that everything is treated right. So when we do the counts, it's an accurate number. So we can't just leave.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some jobs, obviously, as the listeners will understand, some jobs are more easily done from home, or you know, if you got your phone, you can do your job. And some jobs are more tied to equipment. So
absolutely.
What we're going to do is create a schedule where people are in the lab opposite days of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that we limit the number of people in the lab to just a few at a time, and tell everybody to stay in their workspace area and not sit at the lunch table together, as an example.
Again, strange times, just a strange conversation we're having here right now. But let's talk about when would the farmers normally order their seeds?
I think a lot of people will be ordering their seed soon if they already haven't.
Mm-hmm.
We have licensed somewhere just shy of 200 growers for the 2020 growing season. So all of those people are already in a position to be able to order their seed with no restrictions from us. We ask if they don't have a license to please, they can order their seed, but don't take shipment until they get their license.
Is there any sort of penalty for that if they were to do that?
Well, they really shouldn't have possession of hemp material without a license.
Okay.
That's the key thing. I don't know that there's a, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know that we would have a way to catch them. That's the wrong word, but, you know about it.
Right.
If they were getting something shipped to their house or their business and the package broke open, which happened about a week ago up in South Bend, and it was hemp related and someone didn't have a license, which is what happened a week ago in South Bend, then the police get involved. And we don't want them to get involved any more than they have to. And quite frankly, they don't want to be involved any more than they have to. But when a large shipment of hemp breaks open in shipping and the police are called because it's hemp.
Sure.
If there's a license involved, it really speeds up that process of figuring out the right thing to do.
I got you. And are most of these seeds going to be ordered domestically within the United States?
Yes. We have, there's a couple of situations I'm aware of where seed may be coming from Italy, which is very interesting right now with Italy's complete shutdown.
Right.
So that will obviously be delayed. I'm sure there are no non-essential shipments coming out of Italy right now.
Right, right.
So, but other than that, I'm not aware of anything that's at least consistently coming in from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now we've tested, we just ran four tests today, some hemp seed that somebody was planning on planting from last year's crop. You're not going to like the numbers, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest germination rate was 7%, and the highest germination rate was 42% on those four samples.
Now, that means you're talking about old seeds, correct?
Yes, so the seed that was grown last year to plant this year.
Oh, okay.
So whoever those growers are, they're probably going to have to order seed that they hadn't planned on ordering.
I see. And how will they, are all these seeds tested? Will all this be tested to where they know in advance that they need to, that this seed is going to work from last year or that they need to order new seed?
Well, it's interesting. If someone is growing it for their own use, there is no law or regulation that says they have to have it tested.
Okay.
So it's up to them to determine whether they want to have it tested or not.
But when it comes time to sell it,
I would strongly consider. Mm-hmm. Yes, if they're going to sell it, it has to be tested and properly labeled. We see regularly companies that advertise 95% guaranteed germination. Mm-hmm. And we have run hundreds of tests on hemp, and I have never seen a 95% germination.
Is there
so
any?
So how do these companies guarantee 95% when we've done hundreds of tests and never seen it hit that level one time?
Is there any law against that?
Yes, there is, but we have to catch them.
Ah.
We have to catch them. And how we catch them in a world like hemp where it's primarily direct shipments is we catch them by people saying, you know, I don't think that's a believable statement, and either not buying from those companies or taking some of that seed, a Ziploc bag, quart-sized Ziploc bag of that seed, and sending it to us or some other lab and saying, hey, this had a label on it for 95%. Can you check this?
Gotcha.
And we check it, and then we can do something about it. Then we can put a stop sale on their seed throughout the state.
So for the good of the industry, farmers and other folks handling seed should be very diligent when they see things like that, a little good, too good to be true, 95%. That should raise a question mark, and they should be calling those folks out or at least checking on those folks to see if that's legitimate or at least making somebody aware that they're saying that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you said it earlier, this is a new industry, and just like any new industry, there are people that stretch the truth to sell their snake oil. And obviously that's not the case with most of the good people involved in the industry, but there are those that that don't understand agricultural practices. They don't understand how to run a true germination trial, that type of thing, and they'll make a number up, and they'll put it on a label. So it's imperative that people have their eyes wide open. In fact, when I was able to do presentations before this coronavirus stuff kicked in, when I was able to do coronavirus presentations, my presentation was called Hemp in Indiana, Eyes Wide Open. Just for that very reason.
Gotcha.
Make sure you're double checking. If anything sounds too good to be true, it is.
And of course, logically, you'd say don't just buy from the first person that comes along or what have you. But what sort of research can farmers do to find out who is legitimate? Is there some sort of database or somewhere they can go, Google review or something where they can say, wait a minute, some other folks have had problems with these grow or this provider?
Google's a great place to go, and the other thing to do is ask the seed seller for a list of people that have bought their seed before.
Okay, that's something specifically would not be difficult for a farmer to do.
Right. Who bought your seed before? I need phone numbers and names.
And not people who bought seed this year, who bought seed last year, because the proof's in the pudding, of course.
That's right. And then Google as well. There are some seed sellers who are first-year seed sellers that wouldn't be able to provide that. But in that particular case, they should be able to provide a seed lab report on that seed.
Gotcha.
Showing exactly what the germination was, how it was tested. If anybody ever gets a seed lab report and needs help understanding it, please give us a call here at the State Chemist Office. We can help walk you through it. We can look at that report. We can verify the report with our brethren in the seed lab testing business and make sure that the lab report was not dummied or made up. We know that that is happening in some cases. People will get a seed lab report with an average germination on it or a good germination and change the lot number, change the seed information on it to make sure it looks like it was their seed that was tested.
Right.
We've heard of one seed lab report out of Colorado that ended up in 23 different states. In that particular case, I could call my buddy who runs the Colorado State Lab and say, hey, here's a lab number. Here's the seed it shows was grown on it. Here's a germination percentage and a lot number. Does this match up to your reports?
Right.
And if it doesn't, then you've got somebody that's pulling the wool over your eyes.
Well, Don, last year at this time, there were a lot of different educational events going on for people interested in hemp. And this year, now, at least for the next probably 30 days or so, there are going to be no opportunities to get together to be able to pick people's brains, to be able to talk to the guys who grew last year or talk to people like you. So how can they get that information? You mentioned they could call you. How do farmers go about getting information to answer questions they may have?
Well, we did meetings a lot earlier this year than we did last year, which is a really good thing, because we did about 30 meetings around the state this year from December through last week. So this week's meetings have been canceled, and like you say, moving on through June, actually.
Right.
My seed meetings, my national seed meetings now all the way through June have been canceled already.
Is it possible, again, we're very new to this situation here in the country, and we're still very early on as far as weeks and days that we've been dealing with this, and you say that things have been canceled till June. If things turn around here in the next couple of weeks, for instance, maybe things do calm down in the next couple of weeks, is your schedule, is that flexible to where they can start adding those events back in?
Yes. In fact, in almost every case, the meetings I already had scheduled, we have already discussed with the meeting planners that if things end up not being as bad as what some of the news media says they're going to be, and say it doesn't get to the proportions that they're talking about, and we're allowed to do meetings again, then we will put those meetings back on the schedule.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that we're able to do that.
The other thing we're talking about doing, and I know we're doing one in April, is Marguerite Bolt and I are doing a webinar. And it's not completely set up yet, but I'm sure it'll be on the Midwest Hemp Council website and on the PurdueHemp.org website.
Absolutely.
And probably on our website as well, State Chemists under the Hemp presentations. And we will do those meetings through webinars so as we can get as many people on there that want to get on there.
That's fantastic, and that's certainly something that I think people would be looking forward to.
And I'll tell you, I think this the virus, the COVID-19 coronavirus, it has stunted demand for information temporarily.
Well, are people kind of just in a dazed mode right now? Is that they not know how to move forward? Is that what you're getting at?
I think they are. You know, we have had my assistant Teresa Thompson and I have had 27,000 emails since the Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. But that has greatly slowed down this week. Mm. I mean, greatly, noticeably slowed down this week. Mm-hmm. We normally would get, Teresa would be busy on the phone all day long. And today I've had 3 phone calls.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and again, we are in a very strange period right now, especially just this last week, because I think people have been hit something, society's been hit with something they've never been hit before, and nobody knows how far it's going to go. But
right.
Again,
unprecedented.
Yeah, but again, with farmers, of course, fortunately, they're the ones supplying the food and the products for us, and so
That's
so
right.
we do need
we,
them.
We and, need farmers.
Right.
We need farmers, and we need farmers to, you know, I noticed on Twitter, farmers are already there, you know, so they're some of the first ones to be positive about things. Mm-hmm. And I sent an email out to all the seed companies that are the corn and beans and alfalfa and clover, you know, the grass seed companies. I sent an email out this morning and said, hey, let's get those shipments rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, seed, great news to change the subject a little bit here.
Sure.
Great news is on everything other than hemp, the germination rates this year are much better than they were last year. Hmm. So for farmers that are row crop farmers that are listening to this, the soybean germination rate is up 9 percentage points over last year.
What causes that? What's the reason
for that? A lot of it has to do with harvest weather.
Okay.
And storage conditions. When it first gets stored, is it wet or dry? Was it harvested at a time when there was a lot of disease? But we're up almost 92% germination on soybeans this year. Mm-hmm. And last year we were just over 82%. Corn is at 96% germination rate this year. So it's continuing to be strong. Alfalfa is good. Clovers are up 2 or 3 points, so things are looking good in row crop agriculture and pasture agriculture germination rates and seed quality.
Well, we certainly hope our farmers have a great year this year. That would be a very positive thing that everybody can hang their hat on. And we know the farmers are the strongest people in this country. That's the backbone of this country.
Absolutely.
So they're not weak people. So we fortunately, we do depend on these people. We don't give them enough recognition, but fortunately, they're there for us. And again, and that just leads into the next topic here. Last year, did we cap the license at 100 last year?
We did. We cut off the outdoor growing licenses at 100. I think we ended up with 102 because we decided to run them through the end of the day. They hit 100.
Okay. And this year now we've got 200.
This year we've got a 215 total licenses so far. That was current as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. 196 of those are growers. Or growers and handlers, mm-hmm. so they can process their own and maybe store some in a barn for a neighbor. That represents a little bit over 6,000 acres this year. So the percentage of acres per grower is down. The number of acres per grower is mm-hmm. down from 31 last year to about 19 this year. Mm-hmm. But we've got more growers. I think they're being a little bit more conservative because of the issues that happen with processors and that type of thing. And the pricing I've seen, you know, we don't have anything to do with pricing, but I see pricing on hemp benchmarks and some other areas where some of the CBD floral material is dropping in price. So I think that's made people be a little bit more conservative. Mm-hmm. Probably a good thing. We have statewide 544 total grow sites registered this year.
And how many indoor licenses did you issue or have you issued? Is that included?
154 grow sites. 154 grow sites.
Okay, 154 grow sites. Of the 200 licenses, those are outdoor licenses. How many indoor licenses were issued?
Well, actually, we're not determining them, treating them different this year. So 196 grower licenses.
I got you.
Whether it be outdoor or indoor.
Okay.
That we're in 72 counties so far. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Indiana's only got 92 counties, and we got hemp growing in 72 of them this year.
Well, we just need to get those other 20 going and on the ball.
That's right. That's right. It's becoming much more widespread. Mm-hmm. I like the conservative nature I'm seeing. I really do. I think last year people had a view that things were going to be maybe not easy, but not as difficult as they were. Mm-hmm. And I think this year people are going into it more conservatively. I think that's a good financial move.
Well, Don, that was my next point was going to be last year with 100 licenses, the hemp industry was certainly not set on fire or in a positive way with all these farmers, a lot of problems. And so, you know, that information would have been spread that, hey, this is not a guaranteed crop. It is a lot of hard work. And with flooding and things like that, you know, some farmers, of course, did not fare very well. Some were not able to get any of their money back. Yet the licenses doubled this year. So that says a lot for the resiliency of the American farmer out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about that. You know, we're building more infrastructure. There are more CBD processing facilities up and running or soon to be up and running in the state. You know, that's something else I wanted to touch on. Mm-hmm. We asked this year on the application whether they wanted their information to remain confidential the way the law allows them to remain, or did they want their information to become public? And I'm looking at the numbers here. 60% wanted their information to become available to the public. So they want to be able to interact with each other and do business with each other,
right?
Which is fantastic for the industry. That's actually a part of the law that was designed with good intentions. But I think we wanted to be able to allow these guys to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked that question: will you void your right to remain confidential? And like I say, 60% of them are doing that. So sometime in April, after we get closer to our 300 license limit, we're going to put together that public license, public listing.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not put it on the website, but we'll make it available. We'll send it out to those that have licenses and say, hey, here's the information of everybody else. And feel free to start emailing and calling each other.
Now, let's go back to something you'd mentioned there earlier. 72 of the 92 counties in Indiana are going to participate. These other 20 counties, are those dispersed sporadically throughout the state, or is that in a certain area, maybe certain regions? Why wouldn't we have at least a farmer in those 20 counties growing something?
You know, I don't even know which counties are not listed yet. We're working with Purdue Geospatial Engineering to map all of that out for us. And I'll have a number for you the next time we're on what counties and how many growers are in each county type thing.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, I couldn't even tell you what counties are not on that list.
And it's probably not that important, Don. I was just curious if there were maybe some counties or some areas, regions in Indiana that were not, let's say, the prime areas to grow. Maybe I don't even know if there maybe are counties in Indiana where there are no farmers at all. But that's why I was just kind of curious if it was a regional thing or if those were sporadically placed throughout the state.
I know we've got growers in Marion County. You know, that'd be the most population dense county in the state, I would think. And we've got growers there. So I think we've got about four or five growers in Marion County.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're speaking with Don Robinson, the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. Are there any other areas of pertinence that we need to touch on here for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I've got some really, really good news.
Excellent. Lay it on us.
It's fantastic news for us, and I think it will end up being really good news for the hemp industry in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Our software was finally approved by the Purdue University Purchasing Department.
Okay.
And so where we've had to be doing everything kind of one-off, little fillable PDFs and things like that, now we are working with our software company, MyCorp Software, who's doing several other states' hemp programs as well. We're working with them and having our third meeting in the last 3 weeks to build out this software where farmers will be able to log in. They won't have to fill out some application that gets emailed to them and all that type of stuff. They can log in from any computer, even a mobile device, and fill out the application, use a mapping program to find their fields, select their fields, and then on the renewal basis, they can, if they're renewing, they can just log back into their account, update their fields, and pay their fee when we get to that point and move on.
Excellent.
So it will be much easier for them. It will be much easier for me, which I'm really excited about that part. And it will be something that will help them, because we are required, and they are required, to let the federal government know where their grow sites are, how many acres, all that type of thing.
Right.
The farmer is required to do that through the Farm Service Agency, or the grower, whether it be a farmer or a more rural grower or commercial grower. They're required to do that by July 15th through the Farm Service Agency, which is part of the USDA. And I believe about 88 counties in Indiana have a Farm Service Agency office. So they would just go to their Farm Service Agency office to do that. We are required to do that every time there is a change.
Well, so electronically would make it a lot easier.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes. So right now, every time there's a change, I have to send an email off to the USDA, say, here's a change.
Oh, and you have to hope it doesn't get lost in the spam folder and everything else.
Yes, yes. So what we will be doing is, the goal is to give USDA access, and it's up to them to go in and extract the information. So
fantastic.
We don't have to do that. It takes all that responsibility away from the farmer. They don't have to worry about that part of the USDA. They'll just report one time a year to the FSA.
Right.
And then when they get harvest data, they'll report again. So it's going to make it much easier to comply. One last thing we should touch on here. We submitted our state plan to the USDA back in December. The USDA did not accept our state plan. So that's not uncommon. That's actually very common. I think they've only accepted 7 state plans across the country. So they did not accept our state plan. They gave us a roadmap of things to fix, so to speak, and resubmit. We will be doing that, resubmitting in April. So we had to go through and change some operating procedures. We had to change some methods, how we do this, that, or the other. And we had to make some adjustments to our emergency rule. So we are in the process. We're under the emergency rule right now. And in about another week, we will renew that emergency rule for another 90-day period.
Okay.
So that's going to happen kind of seamlessly. It won't affect anybody. It just stays in place, so to speak. And then once we renew that emergency rule, we will send off our state plan again for approval. So then we will have whatever time period. They've not given us a time period of how long it will take before they will approve that or not. So they may take 60 days again, like they did the first time. They took almost the full 60 days. Or they may take 90 days or 100 days. We don't know. So as long as that is under review, then all those state plan is still in place. So we're still good to go.
Okay. And Don, let me ask you this. Obviously, the last, let's say, 3 years, you've had this thrown into your lap. You, of course, worked at Purdue before the hemp bill was finalized. So you had other responsibilities.
Yes.
You had other things going on. You've had this thrown into your lap here over the last couple of years. It's a brand new industry. You're going through all kinds of things that you wouldn't normally go through. For instance, even just the electronics that we talked about, the ability for farmers to to fill out the app on their phones and things. And you've got to go through all that, by hand to make sure that all gets done and accomplished in the first year, second year, third year. But surely things will start slowing down, I would imagine, for you here coming up maybe by next year, the year after, where everything's in place and it just becomes a fill-in-the-blank type of situation, I would assume?
Yes, we can see the beginning of that a little bit. So, this year we've got double the licenses already. Mm-hmm. But even though we didn't really have software, we had a fillable PDF, where last year we had to handwrite everything. The farmer hand wrote his application and sent it in, and then we had to take that information and hand enter it into a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
well,
wow.
This year with the fillable PDF, our quality team built that system where it extracts the information out of that fillable PDF and fills the spreadsheet and database for us.
Mm-hmm.
So that has made a tremendous difference in our stress levels and made a tremendous difference in our ability to read the applications, because as you can imagine, you get
chicken scratch
applications in from a lot of people that handwriting was not their strength.
Sure, sure.
So that's made a huge difference for us. Last year at this time, we were about 5 to 8 weeks out on approvals. This year, we're about 5 days.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And especially considering that this virus situation has hindered everybody being able to come to work or be, like you said, in the same room together and things like that. And not everybody has the same computers at home and access to files and things like that they do when they're in their office, if they're used to working in an office. So, just another obstacle for you folks up there at Purdue, yet you still keep coming through for the farmer.
Well, that's our goal. We're the regulators, so we're not. It's not something you always think of as customer service when they're not really customers.
Mm-hmm.
But I came out of industry before I came to Purdue, and I was never in a position where customer service wasn't paramount.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think Dr. Waltz has been very strong in suggesting that in all areas where we can, we kind of think of it as customer service, client services type thing, to make sure that the regulated community is dealt with quickly and fairly and in a way that they would want to be communicated to and things like that. So we do a lot on Twitter. We get a lot of information out on Twitter. We've tweeted twice today and once yesterday about the changes in schedule here, so that the regulated community can tell, are there going to be days where they can't get a hold of anybody at the state chemist office?
Right.
Which there won't be.
Okay.
We're gonna forward phones and to cell phones and things like that, so they can get a hold of somebody in person. We're not going to put the message on a phone tree and say, leave a message and we'll get back to you next month.
Well, and that's why we certainly appreciate all the work that the folks up there at Purdue and in all the universities and folks that are involved in the hemp community here in Indiana, as well as the Midwest, of course. But again, these people have nowhere to turn. You are where they have to turn to get this information. So it's great that you take it personally and you have that concern for the growers out there that they do need somebody to be able to turn to. And there's nothing more frustrating than being in the middle of your business and getting a voice message or something that, we'll get back to you when we feel like getting back to you. So I'm sure the farmers do appreciate that. And that's why Indiana is booming right now as far as getting into this industry and leading the way. So we certainly do appreciate that. Don, is there anything else we need to? We've had you here for quite a while. I know you've got things to do, so we can let you go. But is there anything else that you needed to get out to the public today?
One last thing. We will be creating We do this in all areas of our regulated community. We will be creating a state report for the 2019 hemp year. And I'm responsible for that report, but professors and research advisors will be doing their part, writing parts on economics, on agronomy, on entomology, those type of things. And then we will also be summarizing, without giving out anybody's identifiable information, mm-hmm. we'll be summarizing the reports that the growers are required by law to send into us. So when I'm working from home, that's part of what I'm doing is writing that report, where we typically try to get those state reports out in May for the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look for. That will end up going on our website. Probably the hemp regulated community will probably get an email on that as well. We've got well over, I think, 1,500 people on our email list now. So they'll all get access to that report. It'll be multiple pages, probably dozens of pages. So it should be all things hemp in Indiana for 2019. Expect that sometime in May, if not May, then June.
Excellent. We'll be looking forward to that. Should be some great reading there. Once again, Don Robison, the seed administrator of the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. Don, it's been a strange week for all of us, kind of a strange conversation we're even having here today. But again, we're very appreciative that you are there, that your staff is there, and that everything is still in full swing and full steam ahead as far as the hemp industry.
We'll hold the fort down as long as we can. As long as Purdue's not closed, we'll have somebody here to answer the phones and answer the questions as quickly as we can.
And let's all keep our fingers crossed for this thing to end as soon as possible so we can all get back
Absolutely.
To normal, whatever normal is for you out there. We want everybody to be back to normal. Don, thanks so much again. It's always a great conversation, and we'll look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for tuning in and listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.